Most of us can look back over time and identify a few blunders that we regret. Some are minor, but others have altered the course of our lives, hurt those we love. And although they're in the past, these lapses continue to haunt us. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll presents a practical message on the life of Jonah that chronicles his rebellion. In this study, we'll be reminded that no matter what transgression we've committed, God stands ready to forgive and help us deal with the consequences. God is, after all, the God of the second chance.
We're engaged in an interesting study of a much maligned book. Ask most scholars in virtually any high-ranking university about the book of Jonah or the story of Jonah, and you will hear laughter, if not literally, you will hear it in the tone of their response. But Jonah is no joke. It is a part of God's inspired word, recorded and preserved, therefore considered as significant as the writings of Moses or the Psalms or the prince of the prophets, Isaiah. We turn to Jonah chapter 3 as we continue our journey with him. Part of it was treacherous, and ultimately he was rescued. And now, having been rescued and safely, if you will, deposited at the shore, Jonah hears the words of grace. Really, more specifically, they are words of mercy as he is given a second chance. You'll hear those words as I read them from the New Living Translation of Jonah chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. Then the Lord spoke to Jonah a second time. Get up and go to the great city of Nineveh and deliver the message I have given you. This time, Jonah obeyed the Lord's command and went to Nineveh, a city so large that it took 3 days to see it all. On the day Jonah entered the city, he shouted to the crowds, 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed. That, though brief and abrupt and harsh, in less than 10 English words, really less than that in Hebrew, is the message from God to the people of Nineveh.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To search the scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message called God of the Second Chance.
There are so many things I love about our God. I love it that he is so faithful. That he isn't fickle. He isn't moody. He isn't warm in the morning and then cools off in the evening. I love it that he is the same, what does it say, yesterday, and today, and forever. Theologians call that God's immutability. He doesn't change. You can count on him. Which brings up another reason I love him so. He's truthful. What he declared centuries ago holds true even today. Trusting him is not a guessing game. It's not hoping for the best and then experiencing at times the worst. No, I can count on my God to keep his word. He's truthful. And I love it that he is so powerful. So powerful that there is no obstacle that can stand in his way or hinder his plan. No weapon formed against him can wound him. No important individual can intimidate him. No force can restrain him. Our God is faithful and truthful, immutable and powerful, and so much more than all that, causing us to stand in awe as we respect and worship him, as we respect and worship no other. We reserve the word awesome for our God. He alone qualifies as the awesome one. But of all these magnificent attributes, all these great characteristics of our God that make us love him so, there is one that always brings me to my knees and overwhelms me with gratitude, and it is that our God is so merciful. So merciful. He is full of grace and mercy. Do you remember the immortal words of the prophet Jeremiah? When I began to quote them, you will recall. You may not remember where he was and the circumstance in which he found himself, which was so depressing. The enemy had come in and taken his city by siege, and it lay in ruins. Jeremiah is walking among the debris, and he is, old word, he is lamenting. He's grieving. So he puts his words in a book, only 5 chapters in length, named Lamentations. While lamenting, he lights a torch of hope as he recalls, it is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new, get this, every morning. Every morning, including this morning. His mercies are new this morning. One of my mentors for several years, J. Dwight Pentecost, who is now gone to glory, but while on this earth and ministering in such an effective way, I remember his teaching that mercy is God's ministry to the miserable. Isn't that good? Who hasn't felt miserable at one time or another? Don't answer out loud. It would be one great statement in unison. I have. I've been miserable. I've made a miserable mess of my life. When I look back on certain things, I can only qualify as a person good at misery, because I've created it. So I need mercy. That's why it seems so meaningful to me and to us. The Oxford-educated 19th century hymn writer Frederick Faber put it in these words: there's a wideness in God's mercy like the wideness of the sea. There's a kindness in his justice which is more than liberty. There's a welcome for the sinner and more graces for the good. There is mercy with the Savior. There is healing in his blood. A wideness like the sea is wide. How powerful, how necessary is mercy. That's wonderful news for all of us to hear, because God's mercy has a wonderful way of covering over our shame and offering us full forgiveness. Hear this. Listen to the hope in these words. Strong encouragement for the miserable to press on beyond the moment. You may have blown it, and you may feel like a failure right now, but mercy says now is not forever. I've come to help you back on your feet and say with my arm around you, let's go on. Now I warn you, if you haven't learned it already, other people will not do that. You have the slightest mark on your record, they will not forget. They will remind you and others of that failure. And when your name is mentioned, they will remember the failure. You know what it says of our God? As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. I love the story of the man who had made a mess of his week, and he came back and he poured his heart out. It was a Saturday night, knowing Sunday was coming. He happened to be the preacher that next morning, and he said, Lord, here I am again with the same sin to bring before you. And the Lord said to him, what sin? What a great reminder. If he has confessed that sin, it is removed as far as east is from west with God. This is why I call our God of grace the God of the second chance, and third, and fourth, and would you believe 150th, and 4 millionth, and 10 trillion. For as often as you fail, he is there to hold you fast and to take you on. Now, the second chance grace of God needs to be understood. So allow me for a few moments before we look at how it became for Jonah a reason to go on. What it means is this: his understanding is limitless. He realizes that each one of us is far from perfect. Oh, we may amass a mighty fine resume, and we may have impressive credentials, some more than others. But God, who looks beyond the surface, seeing the heart, reading the motives, knowing the truth, all of it, has an infinite capacity to forgive us at any moment of failure. Hear this, because you will not hear it from others. who will write you off. Some will even blot you out of their family if you make certain decisions that go against the long-standing family traditions, especially in the realm of religion. But our God is the best, remembering that we are but dust, remembering that we often refuse to obey Him, offers us a second chance, a third chance, a lifetime of opportunities to move on past where we are at this time. The beautiful thing about Him, for this is what that second chance means, He will never blot you out of His family once you have entered His family through faith in Jesus. You are in and you are secure. He has an infinite capacity to forgive us an infinite number of times. Where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. He remembers Psalm 103, verse 14, that we are dust. And after we have refused to trust Him, along He comes, graciously offering another chance. It all begins with His understanding of us. God is never surprised that we fail Him, though admittedly it grieves Him when we do. Which brings up the subject of what it doesn't mean. To say that God is a God of the second chance doesn't mean that He doesn't care, any more than a father doesn't care that a son or daughter disobeys again and again. It doesn't mean that our resistance doesn't matter. He always longs for us to obey Him. But there are occasions when we continue to do so when He steps in. And according to Hebrews 12, verses 5 through 11, as a father disciplines his children, so the Lord disciplines those He loves. And no suffering for the present time is joyous, but grievous. So while He forgives, there may be consequences to our wrongdoing. Matter of fact, I find as I work my way through the scriptures, one person after another whom we would all say stand out as a significant character in the Bible, often being given a second chance. Turn back to Exodus chapter 3. Let's make that Exodus chapter 2. The second chance is in chapter 3. But the failure is in chapter 2. The hero of this Exodus story is named Moses. And in verse 12 of the second chapter of Exodus, we read of Moses' wrongdoing. 2:12 reads, after looking in all directions to make sure no one was watching, Moses killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. You may not have known that Moses was first a murderer before he was a deliverer in the Exodus. By the way, Stephen tells us in Acts chapter 7 that Moses at this time in his life is 40 years old. He sees an Egyptian taskmaster beating a fellow Hebrew, and Moses can't stand the sight, and he kills the taskmaster and he hides the evidence. Pharaoh gets word of it, and when he heard that that had happened, according to verse 15, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the land of Midian, that would be in the Sinai region of the wilderness, a rugged area, the blazing sun day after day, hot sands, and he's there, hear this, for 40 years. 40 years. Do the math. He killed the Egyptian at age 40. He is in the Midian desert for 40 more years. And then we read in chapter 3, Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God, and there the angel of the Lord appeared to him. Listen to this second chance. Spoke in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. The bush didn't burn up. Verse 4, when the Lord saw Moses come to take a closer look, God called from the middle of the bush, "Moses, Moses, here I am," says Moses. And he says, "Don't come any closer. Take off your shoes. You're standing on holy ground." Then the Lord told him, "I've seen," verse 7, "I've seen the oppression of my people." And then a little further, he says, now verse 10, "Go, I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people out of Egypt." Second chance, right there. Now, it didn't come quickly. 80 years old. I'm not going to ask that. I was going to ask, how many of you are 80 years old, and how would you feel hearing God's second chance saying, "Now I've got a place for you in the main purpose of your life"? 80 years old. Most people are looking for a rocking chair and a dog to train when they're 80 years old. Looking for a back porch to sit on. Looking for a place to retire. Moses is just getting started. And for 40 more years, he leads the Exodus right up to the edge of the promised land. That's a second chance. I kept working my way through the scriptures, and I found the book of Judges. What an unusual book. Keep turning. You'll locate it. I'm seeing little dust pockets come up from the pew as you get into Judges. When you got to chapter 14, you meet a man named Samson. And Samson's biography takes you chapter 14, 15, and the climax is chapter 16. For most of 14, 15, and 16, Samson is a womanizer. I call Samson a he-man with a she-weakness. All the way through his adult life, in fact, the first words you read from the lips of Samson, you can check it for yourself, are, "I have seen a woman." He messes around with women. Even after he has judged Israel for 20 years, he winds up laying in the lap of Delilah. And there, he finally yields. And she is crying those crocodile tears that he won't tell her, the secret of his life. And he finally tells her and falls asleep and wakes up and finds that his hair has been taken from his head, and she has told her colleague, the Philistines, that that's where his strength lies. And they took him and they put him in a dungeon. And the first thing they did, not surprisingly, they gouged out his eyes. Enough lust for one man. You won't lust any further. And there he lives as a prisoner in the dungeon of the Philistines until the end of chapter 16, where you can read it for yourself. He comes and they're going to make fun of him. He's going to be the Hebrew clown in their midst, and they put him between the columns in the temple of Dagon, and he says, "This one last time, may my life be avenged." And what he should have been doing all of his life, and that's delivering the people from the Philistines, he kills more at his death than he did in all his life. Second chance finally comes with his final breath. Samson at the end of his life.
You're listening to Insight for Living. And we're just midway through a study in Jonah chapter 3 from Chuck Swindoll. He's titled today's message, God of the Second Chance. And to learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. Moses, Samson, Jonah, they're all men that we revere. But even these biblical characters made mistakes and needed the mercy of a loving God. Perhaps you're watching one of your sons or daughters act out in rebellion against God. Maybe it's a grandchild. You can see the telltale signs of running from Him rather than toward Him. Well, Insight for Living Ministries is all about throwing a lifeline to those who are drowning in their own rebellion and reminding them that our God is merciful and ready to rescue. Some are not in rebellion, but have become disengaged from God's amazing grace. Gratefully, we hear wonderful stories from those who've been quickened in their spirit and responded to the grace of God. Recently, a pastor left a voicemail at Insight for Living Ministries and said he's been preaching for 60 years. This pastor spoke about Chuck's teaching on grace. He said, and I'm quoting, "God has awakened grace in my life again, and I'm just so excited about preaching the Word of God, more excited than at any time in my lifetime." Well, it's never too late to respond to God's grace, and it's never too late to join us in the all-out effort to become a fragrance of God's grace to those who desperately need Him. Would you be willing to become one of our monthly companions? This is a powerful way to link arms with us because your consistent support has a multiplying impact over the course of 1 year. You set the amount of your monthly gift and then enjoy the satisfaction of having a ministry of your own. Become a monthly companion right now by calling us. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888. That's 1-800-772-8888. Or go online to insight.org/monthly companion. Join us again tomorrow when Chuck Swindoll continues his encouraging message called God of the Second Chance here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, God of the Second Chance, was copyrighted in 2018 and 2019, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2019 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.